Hello and welcome to a football podcast. My name is Devang Desai and I'm joined this week by David Goss and Nick Andrade. Today we chat TFC continuing to rack up the wins, LAFC back on track, the fun that is the international break, and of course, as always, it's Ask AFP. Gentlemen, happy Thanksgiving to our Canadian listeners, to Nick. David, no salutations to you. It's just another day.
Man, I was so excited. I've got fall leaves out my window. It feels like Thanksgiving here, or at least my version of it in my head. And then you just drop me like that, Devang. That's brutal.
You know, I'm so rattled by how bad the international break has been that I came into this recording with like a scorched earth policy, and it took me literally 30 seconds. So I apologize, David. How are you're in Colorado, correct?
I am in Colorado. Because I figured it would be the best place to celebrate Canadian Thanksgiving since I'm not allowed in Canada. So I came here. It's closer. It's colder here. You know, it's a little bit more of Canadian vibes. Everyone wears flannel everywhere and stuff like that. So I'm getting that watered down version for the holiday.
We call it Canada too up here. That's how we refer to Colorado. Good hockey team. I love the Kroenke family. They're out there headquarters. So it's a good spot. Nick, how was your Thanksgiving, sir?
Oh, it was wonderful. I only spent it with my girlfriend, but we bought a bunch of ingredients. We cooked amazing meals. I cooked an expensive steak just for me. Wow. It was incredible.
Just for you?
Does your girlfriend not like steak, or were you just...
No, she doesn't eat steak. Okay. So she only eats chicken or vegetarian options. So she told me I could have any choice of protein I wanted. And I got a nice old strip loin.
So I also don't eat things, by the way. And my girlfriend will sometimes order food with things I don't eat because she wants the anti-David version. So I see you, Nick. I see you.
Love it. To me, that's true love. And also, I love going out to get ingredients, not groceries. That's a true, you know, you're talking to a true connoisseur. This isn't someone just dilly-dallying around in the kitchen. This is someone going in with intent.
I actually went to three stores to find fresh rosemary, because what I did with my steak is you throw in the butter, you throw in some garlic and some fresh rosemary, and then you baste it. You basted it, and it came out medium rare, and it was, oh, so good.
Nick Andrade discovering basting for the first time, folks, on a football podcast. Fantastic.
Also, I've got a rosemary plant in my backyard, Nick, so next time you want some, just pop down.
Of course.
It's Thanksgiving in Canada, gents, so before we move on, perhaps, David, we start with the resident honorary Canadian. What are you thankful for in the world of football?
Well, so first of all, I'm thankful for a football podcast. And you, gents, as well as Sean Kay, who is Canadian, so he gets 37 months of paternity leave. outside of that, I'd say I'm thankful that Hamilton won the Canadian Premier League, that Calgary played well, that Edmonton played. Just kidding. I've been told that I say those names wrong, so I just want to throw that out there in the world. In the world of soccer, I'd actually say the thing I'm most thankful for is the emergence, I think, of a great new generation of players. It felt like outside after the Messi Ronaldo bump, and you know, every year Ballon d'Or was that third guy of Xavi and Iniesta, whatever, we all were kind of like resting our hopes on Mbappe and there wasn't much else. And now I watch games, I look around the world, I watch international games, which the quality we will discuss, but the talent players are young, and I think there's a great generation of players coming through that plays the game in a different way, that has the ability to break games open, but can also connect, and you see the ball moving and things. So I'm excited to watch that happen. And I think it's happening in a lot of different countries, and it's going to be fun over the next few years.
Nicholas.
Wow. Well, I want to be thankful for Sean as well. I miss the guy. And to you guys, you know, that was really touching, David. Thank you. but the thing that I wanted to bring up here that I'm really thankful for is because of an Instagram post that I saw the other day. And I just want to say I'm really thankful for Cristiano Ronaldo because God. I saw on the 433 Instagram account, they posted him getting subbed off and coming on with João Felix, and then also showing him coming on for the first time or one of the first times, and Luis Figo coming off. And guys, I got emotional. I got emotional. I thought about my age. I thought about how old I was, and I thought about the career of him and everything he's done for Portugal. And I just got very emotional. So I just wanted to say, I'm thankful for you, sir, for the years of service that you gave us.
Wow.
I did not see that coming.
That got emotional for you, Nick, so I'm proud of you for delivering that. Excellent answers, folks. I have one that maybe is a bit top of mind based on some of the news out of England, based on how easy it is to watch games in that country, watch Premier League games, and now that you have to have a base subscription and then basically pay a pay-per-view per match over there. In Canada, it's not the case. You probably have DAZN if you are listening to this podcast. And I was just thinking all the time that we can watch that game, that this league over here easier than you can over in England, which is totally bizarre. But I think we're fortunate for that. Also, I'm thankful for Mikel Arteta, and I'm thankful for Arsene Wenger's new biography because I want to read it because I'm sure there's some stuff in there that will be extra good.
It was funny because I was joking with an Arsenal friend recently about how Arsene, we were calling him Arsene, we almost signed so-and-so Wenger, or Arsene, this great player actually trialed at Arsenal Wenger. And then he came out with these quotes about Ronaldo and all these other people. He's like, well, we almost signed them. It's like, dude, you nailed it. You don't actually have to sign the players and be good. You just have to almost have signed them to say you could have if you wanted to. That's a boss move.
We were linked to Julian Draxler this window. I'm like, we've been linked to him since 2013. I'm like, there is an XI plus bench plus reserves of the almost came to Arsenal. But
it only took Ozil about 6 years to go from Bremen Arsenal. Yeah.
Outside of the football stuff, though, I think Wenger's philosophies on life is something I'm interested in. I've been interested in him for a while regarding that. So it's going to be a good read, I think.
When I was doing my research for the podcast yesterday, everything kept coming up about him, like what his thoughts are on the World Cup, what his thoughts are on this. Why did he not sign this guy, that guy? So now I know why, because his book came out. Okay, that makes sense.
It's called marketing. But yeah. There in The Guardian, there was an interview with him where they opened it up and let people send in questions for Wenger from around the world, which included celebrities as well. So I thought that was super interesting because you have a lot of really influential people that look up to Wenger as well. And that it's not just about the soccer either. So definitely looking forward to that.
Did we just land on our first AFP book club?
Oh, wow. That might be a good idea. Yeah. Let's discuss it in the Discord, which I'm getting to right now. If you want to join us over there, we have a pretty fun time talking about soccer from around the globe. You can by joining us on Patreon. We are at patreon.com/afootballpodcast. Over there, you get access to that Discord as well as exclusive interviews with the newsmakers from MLS, CPL, as well as soccer at large, plus more Upper Deck soccer packs. So to get this podcast ad-free, subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/afootballpodcast and join today. Coming up after the break, it's the headlines for this week. Welcome back to A Football Podcast. It's your favorite time of the week. Headlines. Nick, take it away.
Yeah, guys, international break. My least favorite break of the year when the World Cup or Euros aren't going on and it's just the Nation Leagues or qualifying. Whatever. Anyway, teams moved on in the Euro qualifiers. What was your favorite match of the bunch?
Great question, Nick. I'd start with F your Eurocentrism, and I'll go South American World Cup qualifying because I don't even recognize Europe. And I'll say the Colombia-Venezuela game. Well, Colombia was all over Venezuela. Gorgeous goals. You saw the Atalanta front two that me and Devang have oozed over for the last year or so. Do their thing. James Rodriguez back where he belongs. I love this Colombia group. It's fascinating to me is they were one of the best attacking teams over the last 6 years. And now you look at Sanchez and Mina at center back, and they're going to be one of the best defensive groups for the next 10 years. So it's interesting to watch. It's been fun. South American World Cup qualifying, I think, started pretty well. A bunch of goals in the Peru-Paraguay game, although it was a little choppy. So I'm going to go there and say that was my favorite. I can tell you what my least favorite was, but we'll get to it next time.
My polite answer, and I say this before just lighting into the entire idea of international football at this time, but I enjoyed watching Jack Grealish play for England. I think they're fools if they take him out of the lineup. He's a difference maker for them. It's not just an England bias or Premier League bias. I think he's legitimately good and offers England something that they don't really have going forward in terms of creativity. So I enjoyed watching that. But in general, the fact that they even had this international break to me is ridiculous. You're seeing players already test positive for coronavirus while they're with their teams And now they're supposed to come back to the Premier League club setup. To have this window now, I think it's just the audacity. I know FIFA doesn't usually like to do things normally or properly or perhaps even legally, but the fact that they went ahead with this window, like I don't usually come down on the side of MLS clubs or what's going on there in terms of how they released their players or how they didn't release their players for this window, but I cannot believe that they went ahead with this.
So Devang, I love international soccer. I probably like it more than I like club soccer. When I see a player, I'm like, where's that player from? And when I talk about a player, I'm like, oh, the Senegalese attacking midfielder, not the guy who plays for Rennes. And I agree wholeheartedly that it is absurd to have played international games right now, not just because it's wild to make people fly around the world, join a new group of people from other parts of the world, and then go back to their home, not just their home clubs, their families, but you've condensed everything into a small period of time, and then you're adding more games onto the legs of these players with kind of no direction to it. Like, you're playing Euro qualifiers, and then you're going into Nations League play, and then you come back into Euro qualifiers, then you go into World Cup qualifying to come back into Nations League play. Nothing makes sense with any of this. And as someone who, like, we haven't seen the US play in a while, you guys haven't seen Canada play, I'd love to see them play. It still blows my mind that anyone thinks it's a good idea to put these games on.
My question to you guys actually is, like, would you go ahead with qualifying and leave all the other exhibitions out, or would you just axe the whole thing?
I mean, there's an idea for having a kind of bubble for these last few games for the Euro 2021 qualifying now, if they could somehow pull that off. But
the Euro qualifying, Devang, is like, there's 7-8 teams left. There was 16 when we came into this. Like, you could have just played those. Because the problem is, if everyone in Europe plays, it's unfair that other countries around the world can't play. Obviously, some of that goes down to your health infrastructure and things like that. It also goes down to age-old colonialism and all those things, which we don't have enough time to break it all down. So I think that it's fair to say, like, if you have a legitimate competition you have to qualify for, you can have those games. But otherwise, I don't think everyone else should be playing. And that's the problem, is that, well, Mexico sees teams in Europe playing, they want to play. And then South America, their whole draw, everything they do is around their national teams. That's all people care about. That's the number one TV rights. That's the number one ticket sales, although there's no tickets. Like, everything is geared around national teams in these countries because most of their great players leave fairly young and go to another country. But you had to find a way to say, we're going to figure out World Cup qualifying as a world. Everyone has to do it. So everyone has to figure it out. And if you hadn't played these windows, you could have made large windows next summer, next winter, where you could do a bubble because you'd have enough time and you'd play four each country could play four qualifiers in that time, whether it's CONCACAF or Asia, Africa or South America. And instead, you tried to jam in these weird friendlies to allow everyone to play. And now you've kind of kept the calendar the same way.
The final eight teams for the Euro qualifying is Georgia versus North Macedonia, Hungary, Iceland, Serbia, Scotland, and Northern Ireland, Slovakia. Who are your four teams that you think will move on to the Euros?
Tell you who won't move on. The goddamn Scots. I lived in Israel for a time, so I watch Israel when they're on, and Israel went to Scotland and had 61% possession and lost in penalty kicks 5-4 to a Scotland team that barely played soccer. And I had to sit through this broadcaster being like, oh, it's been an even match. I don't know what game you're watching. So forget the Scots and the Tartan Army and all of them. And I hope they never play in a competition ever again. That's my answer.
Just to pile on here, one of the worst games I've ever seen in my life, Scotland-Israel. To go to extra time, just to add a final dagger to the gut of anyone watching that as a neutral without a rooting interest, my man, terrible. I am actually looking forward to Serbia-Scotland, though. So it's an interesting matchup. A lot of guys you know, quote-unquote, but I'll pick Serbia in that. I'm going to pick Georgia to go through as well. Let's see, I'm kind of making guesses here. Let's go Iceland.
Yeah, the Hungary-Iceland game is probably the most even matchup, but I would say Iceland right now, even with the players that haven't come into camp, have a more well-rounded group than what Hungary has.
And to mention the scheduling weirdness, Bosnia's and Herzegovina have had just a soul-crushing week. They lose to Northern Ireland in penalties in a game, in a situation they really had no business losing, and then they had to play a Nations League match right after that as well. But I'd like Marek Hamšík to single-handedly will Slovakia past Northern Ireland there.
So can I just add a little international note? unfortunately, to Nick's Thanksgiving and say that it's come out that Cristiano Ronaldo just tested positive for coronavirus and is leaving the Portuguese national team for quarantine.
Oh, because I know that Jose Fonte tested positive. So I was like, uh-oh. And there you go. Wow. Okay. I don't know if I can continue this, guys. I'm just kidding.
Nick, this is where you separate amateurs from pros. This is where you rise.
Norway was eliminated by Serbia. Is it disappointing that Erling Haaland will not be showcased at the Euros? He scored a hat trick days after, actually.
Definitely. I think every time these tournaments come around, you want to see the biggest stars. In this case, the youngest star, a person that is on track to ascend to the highest platforms of this sport. That being said, because of how much soccer has been on recently, I feel like I've watched Erling Haaland enough. I don't feel like I'm going to necessarily miss out on watching Norway in general, the team of Norway. I don't think I'm going to miss that much. So it's sad, but it's not the end of the world.
I agree with Devang. Also, I'd say with the changes in the World Cup coming, it's nice that not everyone qualifies for everything. But with the Norway comment, Lars Lagerbäck, who's done an incredible job as an international manager, great Nigeria team in 2010, Iceland, obviously, all the things they've accomplished. But he's a regressive manager, and you have a team with Haaland and Odegaard, who are 20 and 21, and some of the best young attacking talent. He's probably the wrong man for this job, so it'll be interesting to see if this is considered a setback, because while they have this young talent, an FA has to decide, well, when is the time when they have to hit? And you don't want to be too late. I think Belgium did a good job, right, when they made their coaching change for this golden generation, where they felt 4 and 6 years ago that they weren't hitting. And so they went and made a change in Roberto Martinez, whatever it is you think of him, I think got the best out of them at World Cup 2018. You have to make that decision at the right time, because it's not immediate fixes with national teams. It takes a while. So you have to know if Haaland's your golden boy and Odegaard is, and where they're at in terms of their career, you got to make the move early enough.
USsoccer.com released a story about the 10 U.S. men's national team players who will play for the team that all have qualified for Champions League, all 25 and under. Is it the most promising group of players the U.S. has ever seen, David?
How does it feel that on your Thanksgiving, U.S. soccer just came out and dunked on Canada's head like that?
They made sure to do it on Thanksgiving.
First of all, shouts to Jeff Crandall, who runs digital at U.S. soccer. He came out with a story about him posting the social media clips from Kuva.
That was wild.
Yeah. And it kind of, takes you those moments. I think for all of us, we've worked in teams, so we see the people behind the camera. Other people don't. But it was, and shouts to him for, having the courage to come out with that and talk about that. But it probably is. The big one that comes out is the Landon Donovan group. They went to semifinals of the U17 World Cup in 1999. It was Oguchi Onyewu, DeMarcus Beasley, Landon Donovan, Kyle Beckerman. It was a really good group of players. And then they went straight in and were factors in 2001 in qualifying and Gold Cup, and then obviously 2002 at the World Cup. So this is the group that's most heralded since then. And we still need to see production at the full international level, which unfortunately, as we've talked about, is not super possible right now. But from a pure excitement point of view, I think this is the highest we've had since then, which is 20 years now.
I don't have much to add on David's points there, but to go back to Jeff and the story of Trinidad Tobago and US and that qualifier, the amount of second thought and second guessing you have when you're posting to team channels and team accounts is constant. And I could put myself in Jeff's shoes before he posted that photo and like what he was thinking and what ended up happening. And it's every community manager or team manager's worst nightmare in the digital space. But I thought he handled it super well in how he laid it out there on Twitter. So shouts to Jeff for sure.
And you got to love Bruce Arena not rotating a squad with two games and playing the social media post afterwards. That's a class move.
What a goof.
Sunday news broke that some of England's biggest clubs were proposing radical changes to the country's game under the moniker Project Big Picture. What do you guys think about the potential reforms?
So I think it'd probably be helpful to lay out what exactly Project Big Picture entails. Very useful explainer over at The Score, written by a friend of the pod, Daniel Rouse. The main things, though, the Premier League would be reduced to 18 teams, no Community Shield. The League Cup would probably be chopped as well, but there could be a compromise for teams not competing in Europe. The professional ladder goes from 92 to 90 clubs, and this also involves a new setup for promotion and relegation that would kind of be similar to what they do in the Bundesliga. But I think the big thing for the smaller clubs is an immediate payment of $250 million to the EFL to cover the huge financial losses that have taken place during the coronavirus pandemic. So, David, this has been universally panned because of who presented this. And it was led by Liverpool and Manchester United. And they seem to have tabled this proposal to the other members of the Big Six. And it would also include Everton, Southampton, and West Ham, I believe, in this 9-team group that's trying to lead this change. They need 14 clubs to agree with them for this to take hold. But the initial reaction, David, backlash. But I think not all of these ideas are bad.
No, pre-coronavirus, it was clear that lower division soccer, especially in England, was having troubles financially. And there was no one really monitoring everything because the EPL is separate from the FA, which is separate from the EFL. And so it's kind of chaotic. The reality of it is, and I think John Henry has been quoted as saying this, is the pyramid matters. Like the players that come through, the culture of soccer, the culture of football, the clubs, they matter to the entire structure. And the understanding at the top level is not, oh, well, and nothing outside the top six matters. It is how can we help those teams, as well as if some of the parts of this proposal that I saw were about supporters, paying for them to go to away games, keeping the supporters areas tickets to a maximum of £20, things like that. So they understand the golden goose for them and they're trying to find a way to fix it. What they want in return is complete power. They want untouched power, which is when they make a decision, they're going to vote on it. All of them are going to vote for it and they're going to move on and none of you can touch it. And I think the arc of history has shown that if you give power to a few very wealthy people, everyone will get screwed eventually. So I think a lot of the elements in this idea are fantastic. I think having that money to go down to the lower divisions, and quite honestly, as someone who loves the game and loves watching games, the Carabao Cup's too much. You don't need it. And the idea was, well, how can we get money to the lower clubs? Okay, they'll play the big teams once or twice a year and they'll get money from that. The 25% they would get off broadcast rights and gates from the top division would be more than that. And it's not a game that no one's watching, no one's paying attention to, that's just thrown in the middle. And I actually think it does increase the value of the FA Cup if there's one. So like you said, a lot of the soccer ideas in this are really good, but it was made up by three rich American guys with the help of Rick Parry. And then borderline presented, technically leaked this time, to everyone else. And I think they're using the pandemic as an opportunity to get this through. But what's really sad to me, Devang, and I want to hear your points on it after, is no one else has a proposal. No one else, not just this year, any of these years, the EPL, the FA, the EFL, have done anything substantial to come up with ideas, tangible ideas, to make this better.
I don't think you don't need to look far to see how some of the examples of how just disastrously run the EFL has been. I mean, the Wigan ownership controversy alone, things clearly are not being run well there. I think optically the problem many have, and that includes me, is it seems to me that the biggest clubs, the most powerful clubs, are coming to these clubs and organizations in the lower levels when they are in their most desperate state, in their most desperate times, when they are faced with the idea of shuttering and they are given this lifeline. But it's been given with kind of a blank contract in terms of how long this will be, what this means for who controls the power balance going forward. And you hear the term mafia thrown around or extortion, but it does feel like This is kind of like, okay, like we're going to help you out, but also you understand that now going forward, this is about what we are going to say. And not to say it hasn't been like that before, seemingly, but at least to have it in writing maybe removes the illusion. I think you are right, though, David. Clearly things need to change and there had to have been a plan in place or ideas of a plan in place much before this. But I think to drop this now, and knowing how the Glazers work, I'm not surprised that it was leaked this way and this clownishly, but I'm a bit surprised that John Henry and those folks over there laid it down this way or allowed it to come out this way, because I don't know what they thought the reception would be, but it's obviously nuclear bad. And people have distrust. They have distrusted their intentions, and I have a hard time blaming them for that.
I wonder if for the Henrys, for Fenway Group, for all these groups, I wonder if it's a way to get the ideas out there and know that it's not going to be their plan, right? No, the EPL, the FA, and the government not going to come and say, yeah, let's sign on with Fenway Group and the Glazers, Manchester United Group's plan. So I wonder if it was just a way to push the specific ideas out there. which some of which will get wrapped into whatever it is that gets created coming out of this. So I wonder if that was their idea, was, okay, we've created this document, we've created this plan, no one's ever going to sign on to it, so let's just put it out there. And then a few of the elements, the 25% going down, maybe cutting the league, things like that, they will get baked into other people's ideas. Because, you know, I made a joke that it's so bold that three Americans came in and said, this is how you need to restructure English soccer. We understand it. We love it. But at the same time, John Henry's owned like 30 professional sports teams. He created expansion franchise in the U.S. Obviously rebuilt the Red Sox, have rebuilt Liverpool. Technically, if you were going to go out in the world and bring a consultant in to do this for you, he's probably on that list. So these guys are experts in parts of this, and they're not in other parts of it. And I think maybe for them, it was, let's push these ideas out there and see what happens. And I think a lot of it, Devang, is conversation. A lot of it's been lambasted before we've even seen a lot of the specific ideas. Right. And I fully get it, because I'm not trustful of any of these people and their beliefs and all these things. But I think we should see the plan before we're completely against it.
Guys, you said mafia. So I thought to myself that I should do this in a Marlon Brando impression. So here we go. That's it for the headlines. When we return, David and Devang talk some MLS.
Welcome back to A Football Podcast. We dive into MLS, the only league really going in our periphery, David. TFC keeps winning, and they've won ugly, you could argue, this last week. 1-0 to beat New England. An Ayo Akinola tour de force to put Andrew Farrell on his seat.
Goal or foul, Devang?
Not a foul. Yeah. To me, it's Ayo Akinola being phenomenal. Andrew Farrell not being a rookie, not being a youngster on the scene, a guy who's been in this league.
Yeah.
Getting pushed around, just an incredible display. Watching Bruce Arena lose his mind after that also gave me extreme life. They follow that up with, you could argue, another grimy 1-0 result in Cincinnati. Your guy, my friend and yours, Patrick Mullins, you better believe, with the game-winning goal. David, they're two wins. They're two 1-0 wins. I don't care if they're not super convincing. I think at this time of the season, just get those points. But you're looking at what's happening to their rivals, including Columbus, who we'll get to shortly. But they got the job done, TFC did this week.
Agreed. And I think that's a huge thing for them. One, 2017. Was it 2017 when they missed the playoffs? 2018? What year are we talking about?
The CCL year, yeah, I believe.
Yeah, 2018.
Yeah. Yeah.
2018, these were the results they couldn't get. And so they played great sometimes, and when they played poor, they couldn't get results. So that's huge for Toronto. And I also think the ability to rotate the squad and still get those results, to bring Patrick Mullins, Jaden Nelson getting his first start, Aro returning to the squad, and going on the road in Cincinnati, which, yeah, Cincinnati doesn't really score many goals, but they're not an easy team to break down. And I think grimy is a good word for it, because you kind of have to descend to their level to beat them. I think it was a big moment for TFC to say that this squad is probably the deepest team they've ever had. Maybe the cup winning year was a little deeper, but you know, Armando Cooper struggled that year. You had guys who were good, but didn't really show it. But this is a group now that can cover for Josie to be out. And then I know your thoughts on Patrick Mullins, but he scored the game winning goal with Ayo out. And that's something that TFC has never really done before. A lot of that goes around Pasuelo. He can create for anyone. But I just think right now this is the deep TFC group is exactly what you need for a year like this when you have to play two games a week.
I want to clarify my Patrick Mullins love. And it's not out of like scorn or I'm insult or making fun of anyone. It's that, to me, Patrick Mullins represents perhaps the end of MLS 2.0 as a player, as the collegiate star who I really liked watching in DC, but I think the league kind of switched pretty fast in a few years, and he found his place perhaps as a regular, no longer there, but very obviously a serviceable guy. And I think the sign of a good team, though it might be a massive cliche, is that you have to win 1-0, or you have to win when perhaps you're not playing your best. And I definitely didn't think they were playing their best against New England. I think that's a tough, for as much as I'm laughing at Bruce Arena, I feel like the Revolution are a team that can definitely mess up plans in the playoffs because of the way they play. And I thought that was a very convincing result on scoreline just to win 1-0. Cincinnati, different story. I thought to get Pablo Piatti some rest was huge. The fact that Pablo Piatti has basically played almost every minute is a huge, massive surprise and wonderful that they've been able to get that. But to give him a rest and to still come out with that, I don't know if you thought that was a penalty at the end, David. I certainly did not.
I didn't. I actually thought, though, there was more contact at the legs. Everyone was talking about the arms. I don't think anything above the waist was a foul. And there's like not a great view. I thought maybe they tripped over each other, which I don't think was a penalty because I think it was accidental. And I think it was Alan Cruz kind of like had left his legs out behind him. I don't think it was a penalty at the end. I agree with you on Piatti that it's been incredible for them, what they've gotten from him. He also is like the biggest cheerleader. He might be the biggest TFC fan now in the world. He goes nuts on everything.
he looked like he was extremely sad to be missing out on the interplay with Aro back in the fold with Paz on that side, because those three have been having fun for days, and that's another element that Greg can add back. He'll have some choices. One option will not be Jozy Altidore, who will be out for 4 to 6 weeks, probably ruling him out till... You'd probably guess like the middle of the playoffs or just the beginning of the playoffs, David, but they knew this. I think they knew that he would not be available when that injury flared up last week. But how much of a curveball is this for Greg? I think he knows what he's doing without Jozy in terms of the options he has. This isn't a new thing, sad to say, but it's not a new development.
And to the point from before, this is the most ready he's been for Josie's injury. They went to MLS Cup last year without Jozy, playing Pozuelo as a false nine. So they've gone that far, and I would argue they're better now in the attacking spots than they were last year, because I think Piatti's an upgrade 1v1 over Benaze. They don't start Tsubasa Endo anymore consistently, which, no offense, is just an upgrade in general. And Io is an upgrade as a center forward option than anything Toronto has ever had behind Jozy. He legitimately plays that position. The guy's got 9 goals now, 8 goals in 10 games. That's incredible for any forward, let alone a 20-year-old. And the biggest part of all of it is it allows Pozuelo to play his natural position. And while he was good at the false nine because he's an incredible player, he's better as a 10. And he can now dominate games, so you don't have to play on the back foot and counter the way they did playing him as a false nine with the wins in NYCFC and Atlanta last year in the playoffs. So this is the best opportunity for Toronto. And let's be real, Jozy's going to come in the conference finals or cup and be the most yeah, dominant player 100%. On the field for 35 100%. Minutes. So you got that too.
You're starting a franchise tomorrow, David, and you have to win in 2021. Pozuelo or Ladero, who do you take?
Oh, wow. You're really putting me under one here.
Because if we're talking MLS MVP discussion, I think those are two names involved. I think Paz has definitely cemented himself as the front runner right now. You mentioned this last week, and it's weird to watch for this because you can sort of tell, but just the Paz's work rate is absolutely insane. Like they're fit. They're professional athletes, of course. We understand that, but to see the movement, to see the ground he's covering, and to see how much he quote unquote cares, the MVP to me. But I was watching Ladero as well and being like, you know what? There are some similarities here, many similarities.
The ground coverage is one of the things that Ladero has done better than any 10, probably in MLS history. And he works so hard. It's why you can even drop him deeper. It's hard not to say Ladero because he's done it so long in this league with so many different groups in Seattle, but Pozuelo's younger. So if you took away the 2021 part, it probably would be Pozuelo because you've got those 3 extra years to build around him. Either way, I don't think you can go wrong. What's your vote?
It's tough because I see Paz more, I think, right? But every time I watch Seattle, Ladero sticks out so hugely, and even sometimes more than Pozuelo for me, anecdotally. I think if I'd look at the numbers, might speak something else. But if it was for 1 year, I might take Ladero, even though I know that's blasphemy in some circles, and I'll be banned from certain streets in this city. I'm okay with that. We move from TFC to one of the Eastern Conference rivals who faltered against the Montreal Impact in an extremely comical game for me in terms of how these goals were scored. I thought Montreal's opener, Boyan, who is, I don't know if it's the fountain of youth or just playing for someone he respects or just playing and enjoying playing in the most abnormal of times, but Boyan has been on one in recent weeks. Smokes one off the crossbar, Lapalainen kind of accidentally scores, called no goal, ended up being a goal. Kind of was a game like that, David. And I think the end decision and the penalty that led to the Cruz defeat, don't think that was a clear and obvious foul. I think you could definitely see that being called in other games, but I don't have anything harsh to say about what Caleb Porter thought in the sense that it wasn't necessarily a penalty. But this is another game where we talk about TFC grinding out these 1-0 victories, really nasty affairs where you don't really have anything proud to say about it afterwards, but you got the points. Columbus was not able to do that against a Montreal team that they should beat. And if you want to win the Supporters Shield, you win these matches. So I wonder, did you take that out of this match? This kind of is the sign that perhaps their Supporters Shield quest is over.
Yeah, I think the Zellerion and Nagby injuries were the ones that did that, though. I just don't think for the amount of games you're going to have to play, because the thing about depth is, yeah, it's great. They've got Pedro Santos, who can do it for a couple games at the 10. They've got Mokhtar, who I've really liked at the wing. Etienne's been good off the bench, but then no one to fill in for them. And so I think what you saw in this game was when teams sit back now and they have to build the game, which is what Montreal does, they don't have the pieces to do it because Zellerion and Nagby are the key to that style. If they can sit in a block and hit you on the counter, they can still do it without those two guys because Zardes is so good stretching the field. And that's where Diaz is at his best because he's got lightning speed, but a terrible decision maker and pretty bad crosser at the end of everything. So I just saw that with Columbus, I think, which is these games are the style of games that they're just not capable of winning without those two guys. And we complimented Toronto for being able to do it in Cincinnati, but I don't know that Toronto could do this consistently without Pasuelo and another person, right? And that's what Zellerion and Nagby are to them. And so, yeah, their hopes rely on them being healthy, but I don't think there's any team in MLS that's different.
Did you successfully get the Zardes trademarked, as in that goal he scored against Montreal being the Zardes special? My God.
I'm still working on it, but I can promise you this. There's probably one or two more he'll score, and that will just cinch it.
Just rounding out the East, David, thoughts on Philly? Speaking of Montreal, they get a result against the Impact. I guess if you want to talk tests and proving your mettle and your worthiness for the Supporters Shield, you got to beat the Impact, which the Union did.
And for Philly, I think Jose Martinez has been the best defensive midfielder in the league. He's now with Venezuela. So this is another group that's shown they can do it without every single piece there. And Philly has been really fortunate this year with health. They haven't really had injuries. And part of that goes to them being a young squad. And so they're able to deal with this type of season. And part of that just goes down to luck. So for them to show that they could win a game like this without Martinez, without their best 11, is another piece in their back pocket. Because I think the question with Philly is, can they win big games when their back's up against it? And they beat the Red Bulls in the playoffs last year, but it wasn't super convincing. And they went down to Atlanta and lost the game you expected them to lose in the way you expected them to lose it, to kind of hang on, score against the run of play, but not really have opportunities. I think Philly has taken a step, and this win was a big moment for them. Devang, and they're going to have to prove it in the playoffs this year, of course, but I think they'll go into it with confidence that they belong on the field and can play their game against all the top teams in the East.
Last part in the East, David Caden Clark, 17 years old, beautiful goal for Red Bulls. Heard he shouted you out afterwards saying that you taught him everything he knows. Is this true?
Yeah, facts. Everyone knows that when baby bulls are ready to go on to the next level, it's my nurturing. It's my work that I've put in for years. The blood, sweat, and tears. It's just nice to be recognized.
Love to see it. Fantastic goal. The future is now in Harrison, New Jersey. Let's go westward. Piling on LAFC, we're rubbing David's face in it. Oh, good pick, idiot. You thought they were so good. Clearly they're not. The banter was high, having a good time. And then LAFC comes out and maybe puts up the statement of the year thus far in the West, getting a 3-1 win over the Seattle Sounders. Missing a ton of guys. Marc-Anthony Kaye went down in this game. No Rossi, no Rodriguez, no Vela. Andy Nahar got hurt as well. Jordan Harvey at 36, a guy who would probably step into a park game that you might have played last weekend, came out and balled out. Great Janela strike, David. I mean, I wonder how much you can really take away because of how many guys are missing. But if this is a match about Bob Bradley's ability to motivate his guys and get his guys up for a match like this, that is definitely a positive sign.
Agreed. I think this was an emotional victory for them in saying they can get up for these big games even when they're missing big pieces, and they can play with. I thought there was an air of swagger to them. They didn't play a perfect LAFC game. It wasn't 100 passes cutting straight across midfield between those midfield three when they were at their best last year. But I think you saw the confidence, the belief that they could play the soccer they wanted to play and still win. And I thought a huge part of that was actually Marc-Anthony Kay went out injured. Anzi Nahar came on for him, went out hurt 7 minutes later, which is like, okay, that's an emotional blow. This team's about to lay down and die. And then they actually brought Mohamed El-Munir in at right back, pushed Blessing to center mid. And you saw the Latif Blessing that's been so good the last few years. And Atuesta being back, and you saw the energy in midfield. Running guys down from behind, winning tackles, quick passes, the ball moving. And I think right now this is a group that the last piece of it for them has been the confidence of Bradley Wright Phillips. Maybe not the production all the time, but you look at the Ginella goal, it's Bradley Wright Phillips' gravity in the middle of the box that allows Ginella to be somewhat open for that strike. And they have never had that before. It's always been Vela off the wing or Rossi, and all those guys are missing. And I think Brad is filling in for that role, Devang, better than I thought he was going to.
I think there's a Jordan Harvey backheel on that Ginella goal as well in the buildup, which again, shocking. The monocle that was in my eye fell out when I saw that. I think that was the best free kick I've seen this year from Ladero. I was, I had Seba vibes to it. I know it's a common trite thing to say as a TFC person, but fantastic free kick for Seattle. I mean, we've been pretty praise heavy for that club and what they've done this year, but there really is no separation at the top of the West right now. Seattle's tied with Portland on the same games with 30 points, since Sporting KC is one point behind them. David, if you had to ballpark it now in terms of the Western Conference favorite, is it no longer Seattle? I know you've been high on LAFC the whole year, but I think these injuries, especially the latest ones, I doubt they have the time to make up these points, but I'm a little less certain about Seattle than I was after this result.
I think that's fair, but I also, for Seattle, it's a blip, right? For LAFC, they need to win a big game. For Seattle, they've won a lot of good games over the last few weeks, months, and this was just a blip for them. And you also add in, Rui Diaz is there, they win this game. The chances they created for Will Bruin and Roldan were good enough to win for them. And you also look at No Svensson and Arriaga struggled, but he actually played really well for Ecuador last week. So maybe that gets his confidence back, because he's been good when he's gone to international and he's been really struggling for Seattle. So I think there's still pieces missing in this game for them that they can look at and say, you know what? We're fine. Those soccer we played, that's what we want to do. And when we have our pieces together, we're good enough. You also have to think about while there's no crowds, they're going to be home the whole time in the playoffs, because they're probably going to get first place in the West. So I think that even bumps them up a little more. I'd say right now, Seattle's still the favorite in the Western Conference, and they're the only team still in my mind that stands above everyone else. Portland, LAFC, if Minnesota ever plays a soccer game again, whatever, they're all kind of in the same mix as KC, but I think Seattle's that step above.
Elephant in the room, several clubs might not play again this year based on the COVID testing results, including the club where David is based today. For this show, the Rapids had 3 more games postponed. They might go to points per game.
I don't want to keep secrets. It's medical stuff right now, so I just can't officially say anything. Similar to LAFC, their new center back. So the hope is over the next few days, things will clear up and Colorado can make an announcement about me. But I just don't ask me any more questions about it, Devan, because I just can't say, you know?
They made comparisons to VVD and Harry Maguire, and I really hope it's the former and not the latter. So, Godspeed, David.
But they pronounce it Harry Maguire when it's me, and that's more fitting to what I do. But use Manscaped, because you get rid of all of that. 7,000 RPMs, baby. It's the best on the market.
Wow. I had the corporate synergy checkmark box ready to go, and you got them all. Well done. Before we move on from the West to our final topic, MLS-wise, Eric Hurtado scored possibly the goal of the year, volley of the year, and it made me think about SKC and how hard to bet against them in terms of maybe winning the West, but it also made me think about Vancouver, because every time someone that used to be at Vancouver that was around in that position of being a forward or an attacking player does something well somewhere else, their fans complain and wax poetically about what could have been. And in this case, I kind of agree with them. I think Eric Hurtado kind of got a raw deal in Vancouver. I don't think he was totally there or committed totally there 100% mentally when he was in Vancouver either. And he's clearly in a better spot now. But what a goal, but also what a result for Vancouver as well. I thought 2-1 at RSL, their playoff dreams are not dead completely. Coming off 4 losses in a row. You know, David, I think we mentioned TFC a lot. We mentioned Montreal in the negative sense of they're having some poor results. And we do the same for the Whitecaps as well. But maybe they found someone in Baldissimo to go forward with, and maybe they sneak into the playoffs based on how wonky the West is going to be with these schedule mishaps.
Yeah, I agree with you. I actually think if you're Vancouver one going forward, there's a lot of question marks still in your team. But I actually like what you've seen from Theo Bear, the way he affects the game, the things he can do. I think position is still questionable. And then Veselinovic, I also think has been fantastic. And he's an under 22 player in MLS. So that's three young guys that should be key to what you're doing going forward for Vancouver. So if nothing else this year, and Thomas Hassall, you've brought that out of it, and maybe that gives you a building block for the future. The problem with Vancouver is every time we want to say something nice about them, we think, oh, they've settled, they've found a way they want to play, now they can build from here. They lose four in a row. And so a lot of it just feels like flash in the pan with them, because there's really nothing you can take from it. You know, they played well, they beat Montreal in the Canadian, whatever we call it, championship, Canadian circuit. And then they came down and they lost a bunch of games in a row. And you're like, oh, so maybe they didn't figure it out. They came out of MLS back. MLS is back. And we thought they had ideas of how they could play. Maybe now they can start to press a little bit higher, create more chances, come out of their block at times, but have that good structure. And they couldn't do it from there. So with Vancouver, you need to see some sustained quality, some sustained results, some sustained performances, even if they're not wins. But I agree with you that Baldissimo has been fantastic. He has to be on the field. He's already better than Russell Tybert, and he's about 25 years younger, or maybe Russell Tybert started when he was 12. I can't remember which one, because he's been around so long. And I like a couple of their other pieces as well.
I don't think they've ever had that type of player straight up in MLS. And I think they were hoping it was going to be Russell for a long time, but this could be a revelation for MDS, and hopefully so for the fans out there who don't have to watch Eric Hurtado score golazos for other teams, because it sucks.
Can I be mean on the Eric Hurtado thing for a second? Because I just thought about yesterday for no reason, that time when Lee Wynn signed with Vancouver for like $25,000 and never played a game and got traded to the Revs for nothing and then went on to be an MVP candidate. That was a bad
one. Just complete fire. He might be in Colorado, folks, but he is... He is hitting from all corners of the globe today. We'll find out about Vancouver's intentions. They play LAFC this week, so if they do want to sneak in, that is a big match. We will see how it goes. That is MLS this week. When we come back after the break, it's Ask AFP. All your mailbag questions coming up next.
Welcome back to A Football Podcast. It is now time for everyone's favorite mailbag segment, Ask AFP. Thanks to everyone who sent their questions this week. If you didn't get the chance to send in your own question, just hop on Twitter and use the hashtag AskAFP and send them our way. Our first question is from Jonathan. He asks, does Rossi claim the golden boot?
No. It's going to be Zardes. Zardes is two goals behind Diego Rossi. Reminder for players that went international, they're going to miss probably three more regular season games after this, which is basically the rest of the season. And Zardes is going to be playing through all of that for Columbus. So I think Jossie Zardes is going to be the golden boot winner. Diego Rossi is going to win some award of young player, good, blah, blah, blah.
David, how many games are left? Five, I believe. Five or four?
Devang, why are you going to ask me things that are impossible to tell you? You look at the MLS schedule and Chicago has two game weeks that no one else has left. I have no idea. Colorado hasn't played any games. They've got three more missing. Orlando doesn't exist. How am I supposed to answer that?
That wasn't meant to be a banter question, but I asked because I was gonna make a shocking pick and pick Ayo Akinola to catch Zardes because he's two goals behind.
Yeah.
They might have enough games to do it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. So here's a thought. November 8th is decision day, and I think every team basically plays twice a week, almost every week until then. So roughly 5-6 games left.
Wonderful.
Eric asks, which match are you most excited for this weekend in the Premier League? Liverpool-Everton or Man City-Arsenal?
I'm hesitant to pick Arsenal-Man City. You know, I mean... Mikel Arteta owns Pep Guardiola. It's obviously clear. The student has become the master. And we'll see it again at the Etihad on October 17th. No, I'm looking forward to Everton-Liverpool more because it's the first game on Saturday and we've desperately missed club football somehow. I don't know what happened, but I guess we got addicted to having games on at all hours of the day and we missed it. So I'm looking forward to that. Also, I think Everton is actually for real and Dominic Calvert-Lewin continues to light it up. Love that makeup of that team. So I'm looking forward to the first one of the weekend, Nick, to drive more pain into your heart.
I think I agree with Devang. I like this matchup. We want to see who Everton is. I believe Thiago Alcantarao now is out of quarantine, can play. One other Liverpool player that was questionable is now released as well. And Naby Keita is waiting for a second test to see if he can get out. So should be the best Liverpool group we've seen over the start of this season. Plus, this is the question mark for Everton. Like, how good are they? Can they beat a team like Liverpool with everything that matters, you know, with the intensity as the match, as the rivalry, all of that. And also just to, once again, have Hamed Rodriguez just drop one on the EPL and say, you guys aren't that good at soccer. You should have signed me up a long time ago.
You know, when I wrote this question down, when I saw it, I was like, oh God, here we go. The
Worked.
Everton bandwagon.
You're the
Love
Everton
it.
Boys. We're the Everton boys, man. We have the new spinoff podcast coming to you on Stitcher Premium. It's called the Everton Boys.
I was going to say, too, like David mentioning Colombia and Mina and Rodriguez. Like, everyone's so amazing on that team. Yeah, okay. All right. Whatever. James asks, Arsene Wenger, as we talked about in the news, says he wants the World Cup Euros to be played more frequently. Would you ever want Euros or World Cup to be held more than every 4 years? Let's say maybe every 2 years.
I love international soccer.
Hell no.
And no. And no.
I could not say this strongly enough. Hell no. Never.
And can I throw in on the back end of this? 32 teams in the World Cup is the perfect amount. And I know people don't like change and they always think what's current is the best. 32 teams is the perfect amount of teams in the World Cup because it makes World Cup qualifying entertaining and competitive still, while still allowing enough teams to be involved so that it is a global competition and it's not just 25 European teams and then one team in Africa and everyone's just sitting around watching France play. So I think the World Cup should not be more often because it should remain special and unique in what it is, but it should also remain where it's at. And I'm really sad about the expansion and it makes me want to cry.
I'm of two minds of the idea. Like, I get the Nations League and the idea that let's make these games less theatrical and useless as friendlies, which really serve no purpose. And I mean, why are we doing them at all? You want to have some stakes, sure. But I think the fact that this exists now has lessened the impact of having these tournaments. And the World Cup's the World Cup, don't get me wrong. But I think it feels a bit watered down. It feels like there's too much going on to add even more. I think Arsene Wenger's talking spicy because he's got some books to sell in this regard. But I'm not with him on this one.
It's also... So African Nations League is every 2 years. And I love the African Nations League. And obviously they're trying to move it from winter to summer to be less affected, but then there's global pandemics and no one can do anything about it. But a lot of times these ideas are considered by, I don't know, let's just say someone from France who worked for most of his career in England and now lives again in France. And maybe it doesn't actually help everyone. Maybe it just helps the people around him. And he's also an employee of FIFA now. On top of having a book.
It's literally every tentacle in evil is basically, I think it's based in Geneva or Zurich now. So, I mean, it's...
Yeah.
I think the thing for the smaller countries, I totally understand the positives. And A, it's getting exposure and getting matches against the biggest nations. It makes sense. And also it makes sense just to get games. Like, we've complained endlessly in Canada of the fact that the men's team does not get enough games.
Yeah.
And the fact, desperately looking for countries to play. And the fact that it's an odyssey for John Herdman to get on his naval cruiser and find a new country that's willing to play us somehow.
To play Cyprus in Cyprus.
Yeah, so I get it. I get the feeling of needing to make more of these, but the intentions is what I don't really trust sometimes when I hear this talk, because it's usually about maximizing the revenues and maximizing the profits, which I understand need to happen, but also you lose a lot of what makes these tournaments special. I think Wenger knows that too. I don't think he's saying he doesn't know that. I think it's the idea of watching the best against the best all the time, but very often I think we get Scotland-Israel. I think we'll get Scotland-Israel, it'll just be at the Euros, which I don't really want to see.
And you can just look in South America. There was three Copa Americas in a span of 4 years, and the last one in Brazil, the home of soccer, the soul of soccer, no one went to the games because it was too expensive, and yeah. This is the third Copa America, and I thought you saw a little bit of the quality drop in the performances because there wasn't that spice to it. I agree that Nations League has been great, especially for a region like CONCACAF where you have these countries that don't really have set times that they play and they don't really have set rosters that always want to come to games if they don't mean anything. I think that stuff's been good, but the actual tournaments, I don't think we need more of.
And finally, I'm excited for this one. Thomas asks, FIFA 21 is out. Are you guys more of a foot player or a career mode player? How would you say you are? in terms of gameplay, or do you just suck at video games?
I've been fighting pretty hard in my household to just get anything to play on recently, and I've been told that I don't need it. So I would say I'm not very good because I don't actually play.
Shocking answer. So when I, in my youth, I was a career mode person. I loved career mode. I love taking a team that I love that in real life played horribly and play well with them in a video game to get fictitious accolades. I love that. But when I went to work for EA and I worked on FUTmore, I ended up playing FUTmore. So I became a FUT person. FUT's crazy. I mean, it's possible to grind it out, not spend any money and get a good team together, but you lose a bit of your soul in the process. And then the alternative... The alternative is that you buy some packs and you maybe get lucky and get a great player, or you buy some packs, get terrible players, and lose a bit of your soul in the process. So I think there's really two outcomes here, but it's a fun game. I think I used to be good, but my hand skills, I'm out of my prime. My hand dexterity is not what it once used to be. So I'm on the decline.
When's your prime?
I would say, I mean, the first 2 years of university, I'm willing to say I could go up against anyone in a 100 kilometer radius and take them out.
I'm going to say, since you were part of the company, I was not. I have, in the previous iterations of FIFA, I have spent a pretty penny on packs.
You paid for the chair I'm sitting in right now, Nick.
Because, like, I know, like, if you get better and better, you're like, well, I could get even better if right. I spend more money. So I did that.
Yeah, it's a paradox. It's a paradox.
And now FIFA's done a good job now where you can grind it out. But like you said, I used to play like Foot Champs for the whole weekend. It's like 30 games. I think you should be 40 games. And like it would just be like 10 hours a day. And I'd be like, what am I doing? And I just, the rage would be so much.
And remember, the window to play Weekend League used to be shorter. I think it used to be 2 days to get those games in. So you're really asking a lot of people in terms of other commitments they might have in their life. But yeah, it's a lot. FIFA 21, in stores now. We got to have the guy who says it's in the game to come on to just say that.
EA Sports, it's in the game.
In case you didn't know, listeners, that's definitely not him that said that. So
that's actually Marlon Brando, who's been co-hosting.
He's back. Marlon, please, welcome. Hey.
I hope after that we get, you know, some free copies of FIFA 21. EA, come on.
Dabang,
get your boys. Actually, get David a console.
Yeah, can they just send me a whole system?
I just assume you guys will know to cut this from the final edit, but it's banter.
We'll see, Devang. We'll see. All right, Devang. I got a pack.
Let's go.
I got my scissors again, so it's an easy access.
Have we cashed in our Italian national team spine yet?
We haven't, no.
Just because I'm thinking of taking 2021 off, so I'm just trying to see what my pot.
That's how we get you that PS5, David.
This is a big buy.
Let's see if I have guys that I know. Whoa. There's a really cool guy here, David. Maybe you know him. He's from the USA. He's got a mullet and a hat. And his name is Marcelo Balboa.
Nice. Cello, baby. Legend. So he told me recently that the reason he ended up at the Colorado Rapids, where he still lives and is like a Colorado guy now, was because the owner at the time said, I want the guy who tried the bike kick. And that was Marcelo Balboa. Didn't know his name, didn't know his position, just knew that he tried to flip himself over and score a goal in the World Cup. And now he's a legend here. What's crazy is he was starting and almost captain in Mexico for the 2 years he was on loan in Liga MX before MLS was created. There's actually a few Americans who were doing really well in Mexico and chose to come back to start MLS, and respect to them.
We have two Netherlands players that we know that are pretty cool. These are probably the best cards we got. We got Mark Overmars.
Oh, nice. Wow.
And our boy, Ronald Koeman.
Nice. Barca legend.
Forgot to mention Frank de Boer's excellent travails with the Dutch national team since he took over. And these guys remind me of that.
What's really sad, we got to go into this for a sec. What's really sad is from the 2018, they didn't qualify for the World Cup sort of debacle. The next year and a half under Koeman, they may have been the most exciting national team to watch. They beat Germany to open up Nations League play. Wijnaldum got to do the things that makes him great. Memphis was carrying the team. They played high energy. They pressed. All those good things. They've got studs along the back line, De Ligt, Aki, Blind. Like, they're a great team. And now Frank DeBoer's going to ruin that. He's going to ruin something that was fun, that we liked doing. God damn it, Frank DeBoer.
The Dutch soccer fans I follow on Twitter, just so crestfallen when that announcement was made because of how good this team has been as well. Mark Overmars forever. I would like to say that. Nick, please send me that card. I will I'll make it worth your while. Okay. That is it, folks, for this week. Before we go, a reminder, a rating or a review for the podcast, wherever you get them, would be incredible. And also follow us on Twitter at A Football Pod. We're on patreon.com/afootballpodcast. Join us there to get on the Discord and continue the banter over there. Until next time, thank you for listening to A Football Podcast. We'll talk to you soon.